Well, again, thank you all for coming. This is such a wonderful opportunity for me to talk about something that I feel strongly about in our community. Well, I feel like this is a pervasive kind of challenge for all of us as we try to address feeding our children in the healthiest ways possible in the light of all the concerns we hear about in the media about what's in our food supply. I feel like parents have more anxiety, probably more than ever, about feeding children. Good morning. And we get lots of advice from well-meaning friends and family and healthcare providers and books, and you know, sometimes it can be a little too much. So I would like to offer some common sense, kind of level the playing field a bit with information that I've gathered primarily from Ellen Satter. We talked about her last week. She is a registered dietitian who is also a social worker, so she integrates nutritional recommendations with feeding dynamics and parenting and family dynamics. So she's done a really good job, in my opinion, of pulling it all together in one place and making it accessible. I've also done a literature review. Every time I speak, I do a literature review to see what the latest information is, and remembering special people's questions from last week as well. So we'll try to address as much as possible, and we will have some time at the end for questions, and then have some time for imprints to do more interactive work with you around mindful eating skill development. So let me just first review just a touch of what we talked about last week, and that is overall that the recommendations are to remember that there is a division of responsibility in the feeding relationship with parents and children, with parents being responsible for where the eating takes place, discouraging eating on the go in cars as much as possible, which is very difficult with lifestyles that are full of activities. And what is fed is a parent's responsibility, mostly healthy with some treats, and I'll talk a little bit more about that today and in the next 2 weeks. When is much more focused on the structure of when food is offered. Again, encouraging snacks. Children really do need to have snacks between meals. They have very small little stomachs, and they really do need support nutritionally throughout the day that doesn't just fit in a strict three meals a day kind of structure like some adults may use in their lives. Excuse me. And then the child is responsible for whether or not they eat and how much they eat, which I think is very difficult for parents to kind of step out of the way and let the child learn how to self-regulate in that way. So that's much more what we're going to talk about in the next 3 weeks, is kind of like the applied aspect of those guidelines. We talked last week more about the theory of the division of responsibility, and this week we'll be talking about picky eaters, kind of the application of how this works with that challenge in front of you. And next week, the importance of family meals and how to pull that off with a busyness in your life, perhaps, and all the reasons to do that and the challenges that come with that. And the last week, we'll be talking about the whole issue around weight and weight regulation in children. So that's kind of how this month will fall out. So as I looked into information on picky eaters, I was very struck by the fact that it is incredibly normal. I think that it is fascinating that something that is very naturally occurring, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the boring science behind that, has created so much anxiety in our parenting. The belief is that it probably originates in not only normal development, but also perhaps evolution, in that babies, when they are highly dependent on a caregiver to receive nourishment, really didn't have to discern whether it was okay to eat something or not. So about for the first 6 months, You know, a child has very little control over what is fed. And then from about 6 months to two, there is still primarily dependency on the caregiver. There's not a lot of traveling around. So in that period of time where you're weaning off of just breast milk or formula and introducing foods all the way to a much more independent little person at 2 years of age, a child is pretty open. They're usually, there tends to be more of a curiosity and a willingness to try, and that is an opportunity for parents to expand the repertoire of food choices in the home and at the table. So to encourage a lot of trying by offering a variety of things in that period of time is highly recommended. Then the pickiness typically peaks, and it could begin earlier, typically peaks at 2 to 6. So I heard several people talk about children older than that. But typically, that is when kids are really voicing their own interest or disinterest. And evolutionarily, the thought is there's a reason for that, that human beings needed to start to discern what was safe to eat, and really anything that was bitter or sour could have been a risk. Anything that was sweet or rich or fatty, like nuts and berries, are more sustaining. So probably the tastes were following the needs of the human being, and that period of time where you're kind of going out into the world for the first time and checking things out, you really did need to not eat certain things to survive. So I think it's fascinating that that is just kind of a normal reality and doesn't mean anything for you as a parent. You know, if you can just kind of step back and not get too involved in that and just not react and just remember that this is normal, don't react. It's probably the mantra for all parenting. Yeah. So then from there, I would like to talk about some of the do's. So kind of start with some positives and then move into the don'ts, which is probably what you're more interested in. But you probably also know that the research is saying that you really do need to expose a child to a new food around 10 to 25 times for them to get curious. And if I were going to think about a common theme for what I'd like to talk about, I think connection and curiosity are the two words that I continue to kind of think about when I was thinking about what I was going to say today. To invite a child to be connected to the food, and we're going to talk about exactly how you might do that, connected to their own bodies and connected to you at the table and in relationship, and to get very curious about what's going on with the food, how you can invite that as well. So to try to not get discouraged, to continue to just provide the food, but do so without a lot of commentary, and that's what I'm going to talk much more about later, but to encourage you to not give up, to be patient and to continue to try. Then to really pay attention to your own eating behavior. Of course, we talked a lot about this last week, and I will continue to talk about this because I think it is essential for the parent to have a joyful relationship with food, with eating, with their own bodies. For a child to see a lot of emotional reactivity or kind of a special emotional connection that a parent has with food, is a kid is going to pick up on that and pay close attention. It's so very subtle. Tough job parents have. And that joyfulness is what I would encourage. I mean, I don't want you to pretend like you're having a good time if you're not. But, you know, to try to look at your own relationship with food and body and see if maybe there are some things you might want to address when it comes to making sure you have a healthy relationship with food and eating yourself. To try to include the child in every level of the selection of the food and the preparation. I know you've heard about this, but trying to maybe even if you don't have space for gardening, to have a few plants that might grow a tomato or have a carrot that a child can pull out of the ground so that they can really start to develop a connection with the food and get curious about it. The research says that the more a child is exposed to how food occurs and how it's prepared, the more curious they'll get and the more they will naturally try. No guarantees that they will actually eat a Brussels sprout or broccoli early on, but they'll get more curious about it if they go to the farmer's market and have a good time talking to the farmers and looking at all the different offerings there, going to a farm itself, going to a farm or an orchard and to pick some fruit, or going to a pumpkin patch right now, of course, would be very popular, to kind of see where the food comes from, and to go to the grocery store with you. And I know this is the place that I get the most pushback when I talk to parents, because it does get more complicated, and there is an awful lot of marketing out there. So it's your opportunity to start teaching your child about being a smart consumer, you know, to really look at the variety of foods that are available and invite them to make some of their own choices with your guidance. And to then also include them in the preparation. If it is something as simple as stirring, something like dishing something out, serving a plate, as much involvement as possible will create more connection and curiosity. And I know it's time consuming, but I think the payoff down the road will be worth it. To try to talk about the sensory quality of the food yourself, to talk about the color and the shape and the smell and the taste, instead of anything emotional, to just kind of state what is, what you are experiencing, to really kind of accentuate slowing down and tasting the food and talking about that sensory experience yourself will invite your child to get curious and perhaps step into trying something without any coercion. I'm just talking about you speaking about your own experience without any kind of coercion with the child, you know, just trying to stay in your own skin and talk about what you're experiencing. And it's so subtle. This fascinates me, because even just, you know, if you're saying, look how bright the strawberry is, and then you look at your child with a certain look, you know, there may be an interpretation of coercion. So even subtle communications, I would just invite you to be aware of your own, like how you're maneuvering with this. It's so challenging to be aware of yourself when you're in your own habits. To remember that kid food is the same as adult food, that they don't have special food, that there's family food, that you don't have to short order cook or provide anything special just for the child. Now, let me just kind of step into what I would recommend is on the table. I think there needs to be familiar foods and new foods equally provided with equal moral attributes, meaning there is no good or bad food on the table. So to say that you put something like pasta, a familiar, very easy, therefore desired food, a familiar tends to equal yummy for a child. Anything that's new or different could equal challenge. I'm not so sure. Skepticism. So trying to stay with a variety of things without you getting in it. So very hard to do. So an entree that would perhaps provide protein, a starch of a variety of things. Pasta seems to be the most popular, rice, those kinds of things. A fruit or vegetable and a beverage. You know, to not overwhelm with too many things, to keep it at like 3 to 5 usually is helpful. And the child will get more curious about what's there. So again, I know that some nights are going to go better than other nights. You're going to have some days that are a little easier. There's going to be a time that a child will get curious and try things, and then a time that they won't. And it, you never know where that comes from. There may just be, you know, a little bit more fatigue or a little bit more tension at the table. Lots of things can influence a child's ability to try something. To try to, again, encourage a child's connection to their own bodies by talking about appetite, by referring to their bodily sensations that are related to appetite, like their tummy growling, you know, to continue to refer back to checking in with their body so that they can develop the ability to trust their bodies and that you can do the same. You're with yourself and with your child. So if they are voicing, you know, the I'm finished or I want more, to try to once again refer to tummy instead of anything else, to inquire as to how their tummy feels. It's kind of a continual all day kind of conversation that you can have with your child. And to try to reward with your attention and with time instead of with food. You know, I think we just naturally fall into, we talked a lot about this last week, we naturally fall into rewarding with special foods. And I would discourage that and recommend that you leave food as neutral. My children who were 20 and 24 would really call me out on that, because we did have vacation foods or special occasion foods, because I didn't really want some things like soda in the house. But when they went out or when it was, you know, kind of a special occasion, that was okay to have. So I totally messed that one up. But but I think they're okay. I think neither one of them really chooses a lot of soda. And I think it's interesting. I think kids are getting that message. That's a message that I think is clear for most of the people that I talk to out in the world. That's something that they're starting to really feel strongly about, is to not offer too much sugar. So on to the don'ts. And I think I sprinkled in don'ts as I was talking about do's. But the primary issue that there is that, since picky eating is a normal developmental reality for our children, why does it become problematic? You know, it's so curious. And I think some kids are more sensitive than others. Some people will talk about family members that are also a little picky. So I'm not sure if that's from watching and hearing all the reactivity, or if it's truly physiological. There's a lot of research around sensitivities. So it could easily be that the child truly does have a palate that is reacting in a stronger way around, especially textures, I believe. Textures tend to be more challenging. So again, to kind of watch your own reaction to that. And that's, I think, when a lot of families get off course, and that is when there's too much of a reaction around the picky phase. And again, it's so very subtle, but it could be just as simple as a physiological difference, that that child is truly more sensitive to sensations and therefore avoidant of new things. I shared last week that I have children that are completely opposite. I have my oldest son had a very adventurous palate would try anything. It was so much fun to kind of introduce to foods because everything was yes. My second son was the complete opposite. Nothing could touch each other. You know, no sauces, no condiments. You know, lots of totally picky. And they're both the same now. So, and they're both, you know, the growth chart was fine. You know, they developed and their relationship with food is very healthy. They both talk to me a lot about cooking, and going to the grocery store with them is a lot of fun because I get to hear what they're thinking and stay out of it. So it is a challenge to have a child that voices more of their own interests or disinterested in this case, but trying to just continue to offer without reaction that's what I would highly recommend. And to check in on your own eating and relationship and what kind of message you are offering at the table. So the biggest no-no is pressuring. And when I am out with friends or out in the world, I hear a lot of the one-bite rule, the three-bite rule, you know, and I really trust parents to make their own call on that. You know, if you read the research clearly states do not do that. But a lot of parents feel like they have to do that, and that's fine. So I just kind of leave it to the parents' discretion as to if they have some of those, you have to try it. You have to take at least one bite. The research says over and over again, don't do that. So I can only tell you what is recommended and trust you. If you feel like your child needs to take a bite to make a decision, that's absolutely fine. Just please don't reward them with a cookie if they do. I'm sure that goes without saying. So no rewards around finishing something, eating everything on their plate. When my oldest son went to preschool, I will never forget their smiley face. You know, if they had a plate that was clean, they got a smiley face plate, and then they got dessert. Drove me crazy. And I think that's a very common, well-intended kind of relationship that people have with feeding children. You know, eat it all. You know, we go to the doctor and they weigh our baby, right? That's how they assess how well everything is going. So wanting your child to eat and be nourished and grow is such a natural kind of desire. So it seems like almost a measurement of how you're doing as a parent. So to encourage your child to eat it all is very understandable. So to try to be kind of unemotional in how you talk about food, it's really, again, so subtle. Avoid any kind of comments that have an emotional quality like, eat this for me, you know, so it's just simple kind of comment, but has a strong emotional content. Mommy will be angry or disappointed if you don't try this. I cooked all day. Whoa. I mean, it's, again, very well intended, very subtle, but strong emotional content. So try not to do that. You have to really listen to yourself hard. I have so many friends that talk to me about this and they'll go, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. You know, and I'm sure I did the same. It's just, you know, that's how we heard it. And that's how we, you know, we did cook all day sometimes. It was something special. There was a lot of effort put into the preparation of the food. So it's understandable that you would want to encourage, but when you're going through this picky eating kind of dynamic and dance, I would encourage you to be very aware of just offer neutral and see what you get. And again, remember that 2 to 6 year phase is very normal for a child to say no to a lot of things.